You're listening to Around Comics, episode 238, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and Netflix. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. Hey there, folks. Christopher Niesman here. Let's get you introduced to this week's panel. First of all, is Mr. Tom Caters.
Hi.
Hello, sir.
Hello. How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I'm great.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
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 All right. I'm waiting for Mike to finish up his cupcake.
I've got a cupcake.
Next is DC exclusive artist. You know him from his work on such things as the all new Atom, Green Arrow, Black Canary, and the upcoming co-features with Blue Beetle in the pages of Booster Gold, and your Trinity backups. You're all over the place, man.
Hey, Trinity's Mike Norton. Done.
It's Mike Norton.
Just like my cupcake.
When did you actually finish up Trinity?
I finished it about a little over a month ago.
Okay. So it was about a month, a break in between that and the last issues. Yeah. That's cool. How was it? We'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
Our other guest, you know him as the voice of Word Balloon, and he's got a new toy, and he's doing his new phone can do video, so he's
video.
I'll post it so everyone can see.
You're freaking me out, man.
I'm sorry, man.
He is the voice of Word Balloon. He is Mr. John Suntress. How are you doing?
Hello again, everybody. Boy, oh boy. I won't put myself on video because I've seen the pictures from the podcast companion. And I got to tell you, let's just leave it all to the imagination. Thank you.
Theater of the mind.
Man, but I am glad I brought the camera because I know Norton's gotten a little shaggy and he kind of looks like he belongs on the album cover of a Toto album. I'm going to say.
Wow.
No, I gotta work the fro for that, dude.
You're kind of looking like the lead singer of Drive-By Truckers.
Well, they're from my part of the country.
They're from Muscle Shoals, Alabama.
Yeah, well, that's only a state down.
Okay, well, yeah, you are right.
That's a rich heritage down in Muscle Shoals. That's where Stax Records was and all the fine Booker T and the MGs and all the great backup artists for Aretha and Ray Charles and all those guys.
Stax was in Memphis, wasn't it?
Oh, but I thought all those guys came from Muscle Shoals.
I'm sure they did.
Okay.
But
do not question the Suntress.
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, my friend from Tennessee, actually.
Yeah, they tore it down a while back, and my friend Ron had a brick from it.
Was it maybe, because I know there was Stax and Volts. Maybe Volts was in Muscle Shoals?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah, I know Stax was there. There's a museum now, so. Excellent. Yeah, of course I'm right. Well, there's a Stax museum in Memphis.
Yeah,
motherfucker.
There you go. I know, I'm sorry.
It's in the Gibson Guitar Factory.
Speaking of music, the featured music for this episode, one of my favorite Seattle bands from the early 90s. It's not Mudhoney, which is another great band, and they may pop up at some point. But actually, my favorite Seattle band was Screaming Trees.
Sure.
Oh, okay.
So some Screaming Trees this week.
Your favorite.
I'm glad we're all wearing flannel, ripped up flannel shirts.
I'm actually wearing a flannel.
There you go, in honor of grunge.
So all right. That's good. There you go. And before we get rolled here,
and a hoodie on Tom, so that works out.
Oh, there you go. I want to make sure that everyone checks out InStock Trades, which you should know by now. The InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essential showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. In fact, every order over $50 does ship for free. And right now, you can pick up the Saga of the Swamp Thing, Volume 1 hardcover, for a phenomenal 47% off the cover price. It is yours for $13.24.
You own it.
That's a crazy value for an amazing collection. Yeah. An amazing collection.
It's issues 20 through 27 of Alan Moore's groundbreaking work that really spawned Vertigo Comics.
And that's Bessette and Tottleben doing the art?
Mostly, yeah.
And Veach, or was Veach...
Veach was much later. So check that out.
I think there's some Plug.
There you go.
We should probably be talking about that in the next 2-3 weeks.
Is that one of the books of the month?
That is our book club. Yes, that is our book club. Club.
Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing. So,
Swamp Thing.
And he's not a DCU character, so please stop asking me when I do my Q&As. It drives me crazy. He's a Vertigo character.
Constantine is not going to be in Batman, and Batman is not going to be in Constantine.
It ain't going to happen.
Mike, I was going to ask you a little bit earlier how the entire Trinity experience was for you. You worked on a monthly or on a weekly book.
It was kind of crazy. Yeah, it was tough, but you know, I had it easy comparatively. I mean,
Bagley was an animal.
He was, and even he said it was a little nuts for him. And he's the poster boy for that kind of stuff. And he was just like, at the end, he was like, I don't know, guys, this is getting a little crazy.
Is he going to take some time off, or is he?
Yeah, I mean, he's doing some Batman stuff, but it's only four issues, so that's like 2 weeks for him.
Exactly, that's a cup of coffee.
And I didn't even. It was the backups were split up between me and Tom Derenick and Scott McDaniel, and they, I think, did more than I did as far as like when you count up the total backups.
Well, were they working on monthly books at the same time?
We all were, but they I had a regular thing. They were doing monthly books, but they were different projects. Like I think Scott was doing some like the Batman Confidential stuff, and Tom was doing Rain in Hell and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. Oh, Rain in Hell, which was inked by Bill Sienkiewicz. Yes. It all comes around, which Bill is going to be inking some of your stuff. We talked about all that last week. But mm-hmm.
Go listen.
Yeah, go listen. It's
to the archives.
It's very interesting.
A deep cut, album cut.
Deep cut.
But no, I hadn't talked to you since about, I don't know, issue 20 or 25 of that had come out, since about the halfway point. So I didn't know how the rest of the experience had been for you.
I really enjoyed it. I mean, it became a grind just because I was doing other stuff. Mm-hmm. But I would always think that, wow, geez, Mark. I mean, we get pages literally every day from the guy, and because we all synchronized through email. And I would look at it, and I can't believe this guy does this as fast as he does. So it was both an inspiration and a source of depression in a lot of ways, you know, because I was just like, God, I can't believe I can't do it like that. But at the same time, I was like, well, if he can do it, I'm going to try and do it.
That's cool.
It kept you going, and plus everybody else was just so, like, really supportive. I mean, we were always talking through the – through email, and these days you really don't you don't necessarily get that kind of collaboration sometimes with it being an internet based workplace now.
Sure. Yeah, your communication is through emails
you're working with Mark Bagley and Tom and Scott McDaniel, who guys that have all been around a lot longer than me, and I got to look at their stuff, and now I'm working with them, and I'm looking at their stuff, and I get to tell them, hey, you guys are kind of awesome, you know, like the Chris Farley sketch from Saturday Night Live.
Remember that time?
Remember when you drew Batman?
And they're not treating you like you're Chris Farley from Saturday Night Live. They're saying, well, that's cool, thanks, man. And I was trading things back and forth with Scott for a while. So, I mean, it was a very cool experience.
I mean, you guys are a team that worked on Trinity. Uh-huh. So, I mean, you'll always, always say, I mean, the 52 guys are still, I think, like that. It's mm-hmm. it's like war buddies, kind
of. But even those who don't work together, that's been one of the neat things to observe at conventions is see the different generations of artists go up to each other and show pages and get, you know, tips. I mean, I remember Walter Simonson coming up to Rags Morales and Ethan Van Sciver and showing him the covers that he was doing for Batlash, and you know, and then also Walter saying, oh, Rags, I really liked what you just did on, and I can't remember what specific book it was.
Yeah.
And literally it was like, oh man, you know, Walter, he's like, thank you so much. Yeah. That really means a lot. And just, it really was. It was very cool to like kind of see that, you know, oh, and I see what you did here. And you know, and Walter even saying, yeah, I'm kind of experimenting with something in this area. And it was neat.
That's cool. Yeah, it is pretty cool to see that process. But like I said, if you're somebody like me that gets kind of self-conscious about, and if you're an artist, you're probably self-conscious. You see another artist that and working at that speed and working at very high quality, that kind of speed, is just like, oh, come on. Mess up at least.
Yeah, no kidding, because really in a very short time, I mean, he really went through the DC universe.
Well, all of those guys. Yeah. I mean, Bagley had the tough stuff because at least in our stories, we were focused on one thing. He had everybody.
Yeah, everything was channeling, you know, funneling into the main story. Huh, very cool. Well, speaking of the weekly comics, it looks like DC is kind of changing things up. They've gone through 3 years of a weekly comic with 52 and then Countdown, and now Trinity is wrapping up. And in July, we get the much anticipated and have yet to see anything that isn't freaking mind-blowing from Wednesday Comics. And that's going to be 12 weeks, correct?
That sounds right.
Yes.
12 weeks. And I don't know what they have planned after that. But
winning some Eisners,
yeah.
Probably.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Have you guys seen anything from the previews that you weren't just like,
oh, that sucks?
Oh, John, what sucked?
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it. It sucked. Exactly. Oh, there you go. No, but what the one thing that doesn't surprise me is the guy who's editing this, Mark Chiarello.
Yeah.
You know, he did all the solo books. And I mean, there's a guy that really, I think, always corrals artists and gets interesting.
Well, he's the art director. That's why.
I mean,
he's got an eye for the design, and obviously, he's pouring it all out into this. So,
would you ever want to do something like that? Because that
I was an art director for Devil's
Due. Well, no, but I mean specifically the Wednesday Comics format. Because I think,
would I want to do that?
Yeah.
I would love to do a project like that. I think coming on board to something like that.
A little intimidating.
Yeah, it would be like, which one of these doesn't belong?
but I even mean from
I'm not trying to be overly humble.
We're gonna put your story in between Jose Luis Garcia Lopez and Mike Carl Kershaw,
Kyle Baker and some.
But
of
that's
the others,
what I mean. It's just like I would have much more fun reading and looking at that than actually.
But what I was wondering too is just the idea of the weekly format and that kind of Sunday comics page format of storytelling. Mm-hmm. I think is going to be very interesting to see, and I look forward to talking to some of the creators about that.
Yeah.
Because of mapping out a story that way, as opposed to, you know, even the weekly books that DC has dabbled in and stuff. This is a very different animal.
Yeah, you look at it, especially like Ryan Sook's Commandy stuff, and it looks like something Al Williams did. It's just like nuts.
Yes.
It looks like Prince Valiant or something.
Well, it is gorgeous looking.
You know, and not since Jim Chung did that kind of Prince Valiant tribute in Scion, the old cross-gen book, and he spent an issue where each page looked like a Sunday Prince Valiant in one of those old Hal Foster pages and stuff. It's incredible. And again, yeah, I just think it's a different head as far as how to storytell as opposed to the traditional book.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we have a phone call to make.
Hot.
Yeah.
It's hot.
Thank you, Paris.
All right, but before we make this phone call, we're gonna it's a line change. All right, Suntress is out. Tony Akins is in. Mr. Akins, how are you doing?
The defense.
Lords of Chaos.
Yeah, I'm here.
Wow.
What the hell?
Yeah. You said the Centrists are out, so I thought I had to take it
to the next level.
Yeah.
It was a hockey metaphor to begin with.
He's summoning magic.
It's the line change.
Oh, okay. All right, sorry. I thought you were talking politics.
I feel weird that we are all sitting and staring at a small piece of technology.
Yeah, we're waiting for it to do something.
Are you in there, Matt?
Matt, are you in the tiny little box? Matt, this is Chris from Around Comics. How you doing?
Hey, Chris, how are you? I'm doing great.
All right. We've got on this side of the line, let me get you introduced to everyone. First is Tom.
Hello.
And next is Mike.
Hello.
Mike.
Hello.
And that's you work with Mike. So.
Oh, Mike Norton, yes. That's Mike.
Hey, Matt.
I think the last names
Mike,
would help.
I'm doing all right.
Hey, robots.
Thank you.
Robots.
Thank
you. There, Mike.
I'm trying.
And speaking of robots...
Oh, yeah, and Tony.
Tony's here?
Yes, Matt,
I'm here.
It's
like a weird episode of Intervention.
Oh, hey, how are you?
All right, man, how are you doing?
Yeah.
This is
either the Matt Sturgis Intervention episode or Matt Sturgis This Is Your Life.
Stop doing the bleach,
like,
man.
Did I put too many panels on a page or something? Like revenge? What's going on?
Well, Mr. Matt Sturgis, it's a pleasure to talk with you. I guess we probably just like jump in and talk about what you're working on with these two fine gentlemen that are sitting here. We've been chit-chatting about the new Blue Beetle co-feature in Booster Gold. So how is that, and how do you like your artist?
The artist is okay. Frankly, you know, I've worked with better. We're going to get back to him, right?
Yeah, you're not going to get any arguing out of me.
Yeah. Mike is really into self-flagellation.
No, actually, Mike's done a fantastic job. You know, we wanted to start out the co-feature right out of the gate with something that was fun and engaging. And when I think fun engaging, I think giant killer robots. And that was what I ran with. And Mike just took that, and he drew a really great robot, and I'm just really happy he did.
Well, thank you. I try.
For doing how many pages are the co-features, the back end co-features?
The co-feature, I can't speak for all of them. For ours, it's 10 pages a month. And then the main story, is it the same length as normal?
It's not quite sure. It's 20 instead of 22.
Okay, 20 instead of 22. Yeah, but we get 10 pages, which is enough to get a little storytelling done. It's a lot of fun.
What's that like going from doing 22 pages to doing a 10 page issue? Is that a whole different Tom? Are you all right?
Is that
a whole different skill set that you kind of have to pull out to be able to tell that much story in 10 pages? Do you go back to like Silver Age comics where they used to really cram a lot of story in?
Right. Well, you know, the original the Ted Kord Blue Beetle, when Steve Ditko created it, it was as a backup.
Yep.
And it was an 8-page story. Yep. And they crammed a lot of stuff. I mean, they could cram a lot more stuff in the books in those days. So the storytelling, I've tried to tighten it up some and have it be a little more compressed just to fit more story so the readers feel like they're getting, more bang for the buck, so they're not just being hung out to dry with just 10 pages or just some little chunk of story that doesn't resolve to anything. But being on House of Mystery for a couple of years has kind of taught me how to write to different lengths, So I've written 4-page stories, and I've written 12-page stories and 8, and so 10 pages is a kind of a comfortable length. I know how to write to that length, and so that's made it a lot easier.
Yeah, you mentioned House of Mystery, and I definitely wanted to touch on that because that's been one of my favorite comics that has come out in the last year and a half. And actually, you just came out with the 13th issue, which was a little bit different than the other issues because you had three short stories instead of the kind of overarching story with the great little interlude story, as we've kind of started to refer to them here on the show. What was it? First of all, I don't think you wrote that story, but was it cool to see Neil Adams do a story in House of Mystery?
It was great. When we, I had conceived that issue a long time ago. Like, I think before the first issue even came out, I knew that I wanted to do a 13th issue, and I wanted it to be special and different somehow, and I knew that I wanted to have Sergio Aragonés in it, and that was something I knew I wanted to do for a long time. And then when we started, gearing up to actually put the issue together, we got the list of artists that we were going to have to work with, and it was like Eric Powell Neil Adams and Ralph Reese and Sergio Dizzle. I was like, wow, this is amazing. And so when we were kind of divvying up the artists, I was kind of like, well, Chris Robertson, an old friend, a great writer, I thought, well, let's give Neil to Chris and let them work together because Chris is a big fan of Neil Adams.
Wow.
So I thought it would be really great. And then after that happened, I was like, oh man, I should have taken Neil Adams. No, it turned out really well, and it was a great story, and he did a fantastic job. So, I'm just real thrilled with how that issue came out. And I have to say that my favorite bit is the very last page that Sergio did, because when I was a kid, I used to love his stuff in Mad Magazine so much, and to have him like draw something that I wrote was like one of the highlights of my entire career.
I was really hoping that it was going to be on the actual 13th page, though. I was like,
that's the entire reason that every page in the issue is number page 13.
Oh, I don't even look at the page numbers anymore.
Yes, every page is page 13. They're all numbered, and that's why. It's so that the so that Sergio's page could be
paid. Oh, you tricked me.
I'm actually I'm passing out copies. We're here in a comic store here in Chicago, and so we've got a couple issues here that I'm passing around to Mike and Tony so they can check it out. But yeah, I love that last page, and I was like, oh man, if there was a House of Mystery page that I wanted to buy, that would be the one. I was Absolutely. Like, I bet you Sturgis already bought it.
I have put dibs on it. I hope I get it.
Oh, let me tell you, Matt's really good at putting dibs on stuff. he is.
That was good.
I got the Flintstones car page.
You
I
got
really
the Flintstones
wanted.
Cars. You got. I've put Jack's April Fool aside for you.
Mm-hmm.
How many Tony Akins originals do you own now?
I only None. Have one, They're actually, on dibs. And there was another one that I really wanted, which is it's the ending of Jack of Fables number, it's like 7 or 8. It's the one where the splash page of Jack, and he's turning to face the camera, and he's got this big evil grin on his face.
Oh, yeah.
And
but at the end of the...
And bought it out from under me, and he keeps bringing them to conventions and, like, rubbing it in my nose, like, ooh, look, here's the page you wanted. And I was kind of like, you know, get that thing out of my face. And then he was, like, really nice. He made me a big, huge, like, full-size reproduction of the page.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
I've got that
Great.
Framed on my wall in my office, yeah.
Great. That's the end of the Vegas arc, right? The Vegas arc, right?
Yeah.
And I was noticing something. You know the attorney that's in that arc? The guy with the glasses? I kind of got...
Uh-huh.
I know who he is now. He's, what is it, Mr. Fun from the Six Flags commercials.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God, it is.
I was looking at one the other day. I'm like, holy crap. I'm not that original.
That's funny.
He was just waltzing through your subconscious the
whole
time.
Well, you know what? That song they use.
Dancing through your subconscious
such an
all
earworm,
time.
Yeah.
That man does not walk anywhere.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
Well, you've had a chance to work with, just by the nature of House of Mystery, which, you know, once again is really, if you're not reading it out there in podcast land, you should really check out the first trade, which the second trade coming out this week, or actually last week by the time that this episode airs. You should really pick up those trades. But the nature of that book is that you get to work with so many different artists. Has that been A, exciting, and B, a challenge to work with different creators pretty much on every issue?
It's really fantastic, and at the same time it can be dicey, because sometimes it's artists that who are very new, like Grazia Libacaro, who did a fantastic job in issue number 12, was someone whose work that I wasn't really familiar with at all, and I didn't really know how to write for her specifically as an artist, and so sometimes it's just kind of like winging it. And other times it's kind of the opposite, where I'm so familiar with an artist. For issue 14, I wrote a story for Gilbert Hernandez,
wow,
which was like a big, huge deal for me. And I was kind of scared because I wanted to make sure the story was good enough for Gilbert Hernandez to draw. You know, like I didn't want him to like read it and go, oh,
throw it away.
You know, yeah. I'm drawing this, right? But he, you know, he drew my story and it was fantastic, and I'm just really thrilled. But yeah, there's always a little bit of trepidation, and anytime you work with a new artist, because you never know exactly how they're going to take your script and render it. You know, like with Tony, I kind of know more or less what I'm going to get. Tony will often surprise you, but, you know, I feel like I know how to write a script for Tony in a way that he's going to get, and he's going to rock it, and he's going to draw kind of what we're shooting for. But, you know, you never know.
Well, last time we talked to Tony, he really went out of his way to say that he had really molded you to write to his style. No, it's okay. He didn't say that.
Yeah, I think that's true. He didn't draw the things that he didn't like, and so I just stopped writing.
So if you're really good at putting dibs on stuff, do you find yourself often just writing things so you can claim a page from other artists?
I think that's how that works.
It's actually in the script. This will be the page that I want.
I think that's in the script. Now, we got off to a rough start with Jack because that Matt apparently has this enclosure fetish. And everything has to take place within the confines of a chain link fence.
Oh, the fence! You hated the fence.
And you know what? I finally found a solution. You know, you look at creatively, you look at other writers, you look at other artists to see how they solve problems. And I finally, after all those issues of having to draw on chain link fences, I found that Dave Gibbons actually has an excellent way of solving that problem. And now that I appreciate that technique, I'm ready for any chain link fence you throw at me, man.
Right, right. It's like two little X's at the upper panel that suggests the chain link fence, and that's all you did.
Well, that's a cheat I tried, but it didn't work. Gibbons actually does the whole fence. It's a beautiful thing.
Matt's going to switch up and do all barbed wire now.
Mike's robot was nice, but his chain link fences need a tremendous amount of work.
There's a chain link fence in our story, actually.
Throw some of those around.
Well, you know, one of the things about House of Mystery, I think, is really cool with those interlude stories is that you get to expose people to artists that they may not have ever seen before. And a guy that we're a big fan of is David Peterson, who does Mouse Guard. To see him do some Vertigo work, just even a few pages that wasn't, you know, medieval mice was pretty awesome. So do you personally seek out people, or is that more editorial that says, hey, we've got this guy that you may want to think of for one of the House of Mystery stories?
It's a little of each. There are certain artists that I have asked for that I've gotten to work with. Robert Hernandez is one of those. I keep putting John J. Muth on the list in hopes that someday he'll agree to do it. And if he's out there, and then sometimes the editors come with artists that they've found, usually, you know, artists that haven't done a lot of work or haven't been getting some work lately, and they're trying to sort of like, hey, this is someone who's really great and needs to get more exposure. And we've been really lucky, I think, and it's been a sort of organic process. And a couple of people have, there are people who wanted to work with Bill, for instance, and the Bill wanted to work with. David Peterson was one of those, and I think Bill specifically asked Jill Thompson to do the one that she did, and it's worked out really well. We always end up with the right artist for the story, so it's great.
Fantastic. Now switching over to your other work with this other guy here, Mr. Akins, Jack of Fables is just rocking and rolling. You guys are starting to hit some landmark issue numbers. It is not a new it's not a new kid on the block anymore. You guys have really broken out of the Fables shadow and established a pretty long running book at Vertigo in its own right. But right now you're going through the Great Fables crossover, and whenever we had Tony on a few weeks ago, he kind of talked about the logistics of that from the art side. How's that been from the writing side? Not just even the crossover, but just working with Bill Willingham and getting all of these books to work together. What's that been like for you?
Well, you know, Willingham and I have worked together for a long time. We've known each other for years, and when we met, we met being in a writing group together where the stuff that we wrote was kind of like this shared world prose fantasy stuff. And so we have always sort of been kicking ideas back and forth off of each other. And we have kind of similar creative minds. So that's something that we always did it. We've always done it for a Jack of Fables. And so applying it to the crossover, we're just kind of doing that only more. It was a little different in that, you know, there are issues of Fables in there, which Fables is a book that I had never worked on, and so that was, you know, that required a little more machination. But the whole crossover was, there's a lot that goes into it, and I think, you know, I heard Tony talking about it on that podcast, and there is just kind of a lot of back and forth, and here's this page, so you can get the visual reference on that guy, and when Bill and I were writing the scripts, it was very similar. It's like, here's these two pages with these guys, and send this back, and let's make sure that this all fits together, and let's make sure we all know how many genres there are, and don't forget this one on that page. It was pretty crazy, but it never got out of hand. It was always like fun, and we're pretty much done writing it now, so that's why I'm saying past tense. But it's even though the art is still ongoing, but it never got out of hand. It's just rolled along really smoothly. And Willingham made this pledge that if every issue didn't come out on time, that I would eat a bug. And so I'm working really hard to not eat the bug.
That's right. For a point during the most heated part of the crossover, all of our emails were signed, "Do it for the bug."
Nice.
I don't know if that was pro Matt eating the bug or not, but I was for Matt eating the bug either way. Because I'm out of the race now. My part on the crossover is done, so I'm with Matt. It's all past tense for me. So
yeah.
I'm back on Jack.
I think I just pieced together the Matt Sturgis secret is that you have a thing for original art that has chain link fences in it, and your entire comic book writing career has been a scheme to get original art because you just could not find enough with chain link fences in it, and you had to sort of like arrange a situation in which you could get a Gilbert Hernandez to draw a chain link fence in a story.
Gilbert,
actually, I think there may actually be one in that story. But if there is, I'll email you the panel that it's on about it.
Gilbert, how do you feel about chain link?
Dibs on that story,
Matt. We've shared a lot of time together. We've shared a room together at San Diego a couple of times. So I feel like I owe you. I know you intimately, but
this podcast is going a really weird direction right now.
But I don't recall ever seeing you a tattoo on you. Is that true? You don't have a tattoo?
I don't have a tattoo. My wife has a number of them.
Okay.
And she gets real edgy about it because she had them before they were cool.
Okay.
She likes to say, she's like, all these Johnny Come Latelys with their tattoos.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So like the 1700s?
I don't have one, and it's because I never could think of a good thing to get.
Well, yeah.
That's the only thing that's stopping me. If I ever had a good idea for one, I would totally do it.
Well, I'm the same way. I've had a good idea for a tattoo. So one day if I get the nerve up, I'm going to get it. But I'm suggesting now, if you get a tattoo, it should be like one of those bands that go around your arm.
One of these.
Yeah. Keith fucking Richards. Yeah, that's
Tom is showing off his tattoo. Tom has a tattoo on his left arm that says not just Keith Richards, but Keith fucking Richards.
Yeah, I got it I was in college. I don't regret it.
Well, I'm suggesting that you get a chain link fence. Around,
I'm thinking, that's a great idea. Yeah. It's like the barbed wire just plus stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
And just move it on down a few feet.
Exactly. I always said if I got a tattoo, it would be a band of comic book panels empty with word balloons so I could fill it in with magic marker from time to time.
But you see, the thing with.
Oh, that's actually pretty good.
The thing with getting a chain link fence is that barbed wire says keep out. Chain link fence says you're staying in.
Oh, see.
It's like you got secrets
that you don't
want out.
There you go. That's actually pretty cool.
It's one more medium in which I can piss off an artist by having to draw something like that.
Well, beyond Jack of Fables and House of Mystery and the Blue Beetle backups, you are also doing this other little book, Justice Society of America, which is kind of a big deal. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, thanks. We like it. I like that book a lot.
The artwork I've seen of it so far is amazing.
Let me tell you, Jesus Marino stepped up his game.
I know.
So much.
That's what I said when I saw it.
You know, he kind of came out of nowhere and just knocked this thing out of the park.
Yeah.
And the pages that we're seeing, they just get better and better.
Yeah.
So I'm really thrilled. I think when issue 29, that's our first issue, when that hits, I think it's the last weekend in July, it's right after San Diego Comic Con. It's just gorgeous. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm really, really pleased with how it's turning out.
I know you've probably been asked this frequently since it was announced, but little weird following a guy like Jeff Johns who's been associated with that book so closely for, almost since its launch.
You know, it's so... Following Jeff Johns on JSA in particular, it's so not feasible to that you're it's not like you're following that act, it's like you're doing a completely different book, you know what I mean? So there was no sense of we're being cowed by the specter of Jeff Johns, because Jeff Johns, JSA, that's a whole other thing, you know what I mean? I feel like we're coming in and we're taking those characters and we're making a book that is also called Justice Society of America that happens to have all the same characters in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it wasn't like so much like we were trying to follow in his footsteps as that we were, you know, just like, okay, well, you know, Jeff did that and that's amazing, and we're never going to try and match that. So we're going to do our thing and just keep going. And so it wasn't intimidating, because that's how I always looked at it.
I really liked your backup, your Origins and Omens story, actually. I thought it was really, really good, because I really liked how you wrote the older guys like they were older guys, like they were talking about stuff that older guys would talk about, as opposed to them just being old. Like, they are old. They would know, like, Tommy Dorsey and, like, things like that, and I was really impressed by that.
I loved writing that little, it was the Origins and Omens thing. Yeah, I loved writing that thing. It was so much fun to get that out there, you know, a couple months before the book came out. Because I feel very strongly about those characters. I know very well, and, you know, I've read so much of JSA, and even rereading it all to go back into starting to write it, I just felt, like, so comfortable with the people and who they were, you know, that it was just a joy. It's just been a joy to write.
Well, I think it's like a cool opportunity, because most of the time all comic book heroes have to be in their late 20s, early 30s, and it's one opportunity where it's really pushed that everyone's different ages, and it's obvious that they're all, you know, you have teenagers and people in their 20s, and you have elderly dudes running around, so yeah. It's an interesting, I've always enjoyed that aspect of reading it, and I'm looking forward to some chain link fence scenes.
There's going to be a lot. The mansion is going to be destroyed and replaced with
a
serious chain link fence.
Wow.
series of intricately drawn. Well done.
There's no more headquarters, it's just a Justice Society pen. They're like cattle now.
Get in your pen, dude.
No. You think I'm joking?
No, that's the next. God. That's the big. That's a 14-part story.
Oh.
Where they all the chain link fences coming in.
Matt, what is this dinner party that you've left to do this podcast?
Well, I'm actually standing in the parking lot of the restaurant.
Are you serious?
I gotta go, and I kind of got up and left.
Wow.
The dessert had just finished. So it was like perfect.
Oh, really?
And actually, the people turned. I was kind of joking earlier to Chris that I was like, kind of glad that I could use this as an excuse to get away from the party.
It was bad.
It was actually kind of nice.
Yeah. What's the occasion?
We didn't talk about comics at all. So I'm glad that we're doing it.
Now, what was the occasion? Who was there?
It was my friend Dave's birthday.
Okay, happy birthday,
Dave.
Happy birthday, Dave.
Well, hopefully we didn't ruin your evening.
No.
Yeah, no, this is great.
No more than anyone's evening that we ruined.
Hey, listen, I got out of a warm bed.
What?
I got out of a warm bed and came through a street fair to get here tonight, so.
Wait, you got a bed at 8 o'clock?
I took a nap, man. Come on. It is a street fair going on.
You take a nap after 7, that's called going to bed.
Well, you know.
You're a lot older than I thought you were.
Well, you know, according to 30 Rock, you can't tell how old black people are, so. You know.
Yeah, what are you you're like 20, right? No, you're like 50. How old are you? You're 40 something.
I'm 48. Yeah, I'm 48. So, yeah,
you look good.
You thank don't you. Look 48.
Yeah, thank you.
You don't look 48.
I didn't offer you a beer because I thought you were underage.
I was worried about you offering me that Budweiser and Clamato combination you got sitting over there.
It's delicious. It's a chalada.
It's what? It's weird.
Try it sometime. Matt, do they drink this stuff in Texas? The Budweiser and Clamato in a can.
I think that's pretty much the most repulsive thing I've ever heard. I don't know
what you're talking fine.
About. I don't want to know.
Everyone hate on it. It's fine.
We have Lone Star beer here.
And that's it.
Nothing
else.
And you have to serve it Texas cold. Whatever that. As if normal cold isn't enough for Texas. They need to be served.
You actually have something called Texas cold there?
It's on the label. Serve it Texas cold, which means like colder than you like it, pussy.
China Bock is the beer that we drink. It's taken very seriously here, and no one would ever mix it with clam juice. What is that, Clamato? Is it like clams? What is it?
It's tomato juice with clam broth.
Right.
Add
it to Budweiser.
It's savory.
It's
why would you? I don't know.
It does sound terrifying.
All right, fine. I guess that's what, because Budweiser makes it just for me. I'm the only one that buys it.
We're talking about a guy who writes comics about like giant flies having sex with people, and this is turning his stomach. This is what offends him.
Yeah, that was Willingham. Willingham wrote this part. I didn't write that part.
Okay.
You can't pin that on me.
You only write the tasteful parts.
Yeah, I only write the tasteful animal
things. Yeah. Hey, congratulations, by the way. I can't go into a bookstore without seeing Midwinter in the sci-fi section. That's awesome.
Hey, thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah.
I was just getting ready to.
I'm the master of the plugs here.
I know, there you go.
You know, and whenever I'm in Wrigleyville, I always stop at Candy Alley to pick up my moon pies.
So, Mr. Sturgis, tell us a little bit about Midwinter, if you would.
Why, thank you. I don't mind if I do. No, Midwinter is my novel. It came out in March. It's a fantasy novel. It's not a high fantasy novel. Someone described it as low fantasy. I think that's a compliment, which means there's not a lot of descriptions about women's like hemlines and like bodices. I don't know why, but.
You just lost a sale for me.
I kind of describe it as the Dirty Dozen with elves.
You got it back.
It's so much more than that.
All right, good.
Midwinter, no, it's good. I hope that people would check it out.
And you're writing the sequel to it, correct? That's what I hear.
I am currently writing the sequel. Yeah, although it's really hard to find time right now because there's a lot of comic book stuff going on, and I want to make sure that if any of my editors catch this, I want to make.
I'm sorry.
That I'm working on their comics right now.
I totally blew that. Matt's doing nothing but comics right now. Sorry.
Nothing but.
That's right. Well, what does Mike think about Blue Beetle?
I love it. I've been telling everybody I'm having tons of fun with it. It's the most fun I've had working on a comic so far since I was on working on Atom, which was just nothing but crazy weird stuff every month. So this is
that was a fun book.
Yeah, and this
is a really fun book, and this is great. And Guy Major coloring it. What about that?
It's fantastic. It's freaking fantastic.
The picture is gorgeous. I think people are gonna like it a lot.
I hope so, because I saw when I got it back, I was just over the moon looking at it, like with all lettered and colored. It was fantastic.
Well, I'm sure over the moon. What's up, Grandpa?
Well, you know.
Well, I'm sure you know this, that the Ted Kord Blue Beetle is Mike's favorite character of all time, right?
I've heard, yeah. And I even managed to squeeze Ted into one panel.
Yeah, he's in the first issue story.
Just for Mike, so that he could draw him.
I really did appreciate it.
Was that enough for Mike? Has he had subsequent requests that he gets one panel every issue?
I'm not pushing him. He knows. That's all.
He knows.
If you want this to look good.
I do what I can do. Sometimes the editorial staff at DC sometimes tells writers what to do. I don't know if anyone's heard this rumor. I'm kidding, of course. No. We would love to do a thing with Ted Kord if we were able to do it.
Awesome.
Right? Awesome. Isn't that right?
Of course.
Mike is like, he's doing a little happy dance just thinking about it. All right. Well, Mr. Sturgis, I think that we've kept you much longer than I promised we would. We certainly appreciate the time that you spent with us tonight, and hopefully we can check back in with you here in the not too distant future.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's certainly do this again.
All right.
But only if Tony is not here, because he brings sort of a weird vibe.
Yeah. You bastard.
Well, the key is to keep as many Chicago area artists employed as possible, and we'll just kind of keep marching them through to talk to you. So we'll have to get you a list of everyone that lives here in the city, and we'll just keep doing this.
Excellent. Let's round them up, put them in half an issue. We'll do an all Chicago issue.
Inside a chain link fence.
Yeah.
Surrounded by chain link fences. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
See you, Matt.
All right, Matt. Have a great night.
Bye, sir.
Bye, guys.
This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Netflix. Right now, you can start a free 2-week trial by going to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics. At Netflix, you'll find over 100,000 titles to choose from, including classics and new releases, as well as TV series. Plans start from as low as $4.99 per month, and you can keep each movie as long as you want with no wait fees ever. Netflix has free shipping both ways, and you can expect your next selection to be delivered in about one business day. Now watch some movies and TV series over the internet for no extra charge. I use this service with my Xbox 360 and personal laptop and love it. So head over to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics and get started with your free trial today. You guys like working with him?
Absolutely.
Now you can talk shit about him. He's not on the phone. So.
I can't. I can only talk shit to him to his face. Behind his back, I can say nothing but nice stuff about him.
Mike?
He's a nice guy.
He seems like he has
fun. I like what he's done so far a lot.
There's something going on. I'm going to figure it out.
It's way too nice. Way too nice.
He's
a guy. He seems like he's enthusiastic about working in comics and has a really, really fun time with it. And he's doing different kinds of books. I mean, House of Mystery is a very different book from Jack of Fables and from the stuff that Mike has kind of been hinting about with Blue Beetle. And actually, he worked on Blue Beetle, which I kept hearing. So many people told me that it was a very good book. And
you're
right.
It's a completely different voice. And it's not like he makes any kind of – it's not a weird adjustment too, because you read it and you're just like, oh, this is Peter Parker Spider-Man. He's picking it up like it's nothing, you know. It's funny, it's light, and it's got all kinds of action in it. So
cool. And I'm really looking forward to his JSA stuff. I'm
serious about that artwork. I saw some of it when I was up there at the New York show. I saw some of it in Carlin's office, and I was like, "Who's this?"
Yeah, who is it, Chris?
I think it's Jesus Marino. Or something like that. And it's amazing. I've never seen anything from him that looks like that. And I looked at it, just like tons of characters and these huge giant splash pages. And I'm looking at it like, he's just trying to impress people with this first issue. But I keep seeing pages
and they're just like,
they all look like this, you know? So,
wow.
Yeah, very pretty cool.
Wow.
Nice. And Mr. Akins, thank you for dropping by. It's always good to see you. I'm not going to run you off. You want to stick around and hang out?
You know, like I said, I got out of bed to come here.
Did you have your sleeping cap on?
Light
a candle.
I didn't have a sleeping cap. You know, that's more of a winter look for me. But coming through the street fair, it's nuts. It's like German Fest.
Yeah. It is.
You know?
I didn't mention earlier that I'm drinking St. Pauli Girl tonight because it is Mayfest here in Lincoln Square, which is one of my favorite street festivals.
Like the Germans
in the city.
Need an excuse to drink.
Yeah.
You got Oktoberfest, Mayfest. Yeah. I'm sure they're going to try and sneak in like a July Fest.
Are they serving the Budweiser Clamato combination out there?
No, they don't have the good sense.
Is that empty?
Yeah.
You didn't bring any more, huh? I got to try
You just have one.
Is it spicy?
Yeah, it's got a little kick to it.
It's got a little kick to it?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
I feel like we're doing just an ad, like, all we're doing is talking about Budweiser and Clamato.
It's now the drink.
It's good. That's all I have to say about it. It's like a working man's Bloody Mary. None of that fancy vodka, you know? Beer.
Beer.
Beer and Clamato.
All right, the second line change we've just done, and John is back.
Hi.
Mike is out. Tony's here. Tom's here, and I'm Chris. Hi.
Excellent, man. You did that as well as one of the fine coaches that are still left in the NHL. I can't think of anybody.
My little Scotty Bowman move.
There you go, Scotty Bowman.
Even though he's just a special.
He's retired.
He's
advising the Hawks.
Advising the Hawks on being awesome.
Yes, I told them to do that.
Yes, I said I'm Scotty Bowman and you will be awesome.
They did turn things around. I mean, did you grow up here, Tony?
Yes. Yeah, so, I grew up in Chicago, South Sider.
Were you ever into hockey as a kid or no?
Only the violence.
All right, well,
he enjoyed the fights.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is my first opportunity to tell you how much I'm enjoying the crossover right now.
Thank you.
So, yes.
It's mostly him. Much.
It is mostly
it
me.
It usually is mostly me.
All on my back.
So
it's all on my back.
So have you, you haven't done a word balloon yet, have you?
Oh, no, we did. We did one just a couple months. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. It's been longer than that, but it was like last fall.
Yeah, last fall. Okay. Wayne and
We're due to chat again, and yeah, okay. Actually, we should probably do something for the crowd. You know, really, much like you just did here, I'd be happy to get you and Matt on. So I'll embarrass you now and suggest that. And
yeah, I just listened to the Sterling Gates and Jamal Igle episode on the way in to the recording tonight, and that was very cool.
Yeah, they're good guys. They're really good guys. Yeah. So that was cool. But no, happy to do it.
When you sit down to talk to John, though, it's like some heavy shit.
Is it dry? You know, it's so
it's
funny,
not dry,
man.
But it's not dry.
I'm sensing a little.
It's not dry.
What
it's
is
just
it?
the intensity that comes off of you. It's your voice. You have like an actual radio voice.
Am I more intimidating?
Yeah. It's just like I'm expecting, you know, it's like, oh my God, he's going to ask me about the kickbacks, isn't he? Oh,
yeah,
shit.
It's like,
tell us the truth, Tony.
He does ask the hard questions.
So, yeah.
Okay. At this point, when Supergirl was flying, Sterling, let me ask you this.
That's more like how I sound. Of like a high-pitched nasally. What you do.
Did you have a chance, Tom, to hear my interview with Jeff Johns?
Yeah.
Because Loeb was, I've been talking to Loeb this week, and he was like, yeah, man, you are like kissing his ass.
Yeah, you are.
His ass is so blistered from those kisses. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
You should get on whatever Johns has got going with John, because John... You love it.
It really is like, you know, like when you have the Flash do this. It's cool. I admit it. I
remember that time when Green Lantern.
I just
did that
really
thing?
Focus. Cool. I try and find one thing. I have a hard time talking to somebody. I hate talking on the phone, just in general. Like I just don't like talking on the phone to the point where people will find me rude.
I don't think that we've ever had a phone conversation longer than 2 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, I stopped calling you because I never can get you. So
I don't answer my phone. I don't like people.
That's half the reason why I come every other week was really to talk to Tom.
You have to find me. You have to
Chris
be in the same room with me.
I talk to
Sal. Sal talks to me.
I just don't like talking.
I think you've actually answered your phone once whenever I called you, and it shocked me. I was surprised.
Unless it's my fiance, she's the only person that I'll answer when she gets pissed. Really angry.
I don't know if this was covered. Oh, there you go. Mark says that Tom calls you all the time.
Yeah, well, I talk to Mark all the time. Yeah, I mean, Mark doesn't count, though. Like,
oh, how's
your
that?
Fiance and Mark.
Yeah, well, I'll talk to Mark. Like, if I make, like, a really good, like, pizza or something, I'll just call it Mark, and I'll be like, it's good. The crust is excellent. Yeah.
The phone's in your hand now. Who are you dialing?
Tom, call him Mark.
I don't know if you guys mentioned this last week on the show about Tom's mention for his other podcast, Tom vs. the Flash, online.
Yeah, you got a very nice review.
And a very cool website. And I don't know, Tony, you ever hear it's a public radio show called The Sound of Young America?
No.
Unbelievably great pop culture podcast. Cool comics, great TV and film people. They have comic book people on as well. Brad Meltzer's been on there. Jeff Johns has been on there. And they wrote a very nice review on their website, which is called MaximumFun.org.
Okay.
About Tom versus the Flash.
Yeah.
And basically, and I'll be honest, the guy's shitting on the majority of comic book podcasts.
He did. He did shit on everyone else and liked mine.
He's like, if there's one overplayed subject in podcasts, it's movies and TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he said, but like if there's one even more overtalked about in podcasts, it's comic books. And he's absolutely right. But he said the exception to the rule is our own Tom Caters in Tom versus the Flash.
Well, to me,
he did refer to Around Comics as the well-regarded Around Comics.
Not by him.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's all right. I mean, he's all right with me. I enjoy praise, but I also enjoy tearing down other people almost as much, almost as gratifying. And almost
tear
as,
down his work.
Are you aware of Tom's other podcast?
I know it by name, but not by actually hearing
it. Obsessive compulsive.
Tom... basically reads and recaps a single issue of the Silver Age Barry Allen Flash. Like three times a week he'll do an issue of the Flash. And it's one issue and he just talks about that issue. It's great.
If you miss the great storytelling of a John Broome or a Robert Kaniger, Tom brings it alive. It's very funny. Okay. It's very funny.
Yeah. It's
15 minutes in, out. People love it. It's very
good. That's why I'm bringing it up and I'm not going to let you talk about it, but
yeah,
they, no, I thought that was very cool because I
truly, a nice review.
Yeah, that those guys really do put on an amazing public radio show that is podcasted. Check it out. It's called The Sound of Young America, and the website is MaximumFun.org.
It's funny because I listened to that show and I was like, oh, I was like, oh, that's weird. Okay.
No, that's very, very cool.
And they're right. Most around comics is shit. This is, yeah.
This is complete garbage. Crap.
I mean, yeah. I mean,
we're well regarded.
But yeah.
Bunch of miscreants.
Exactly, yeah. Man. But like, guys who don't get out in the sun, don't really live in their parents'
Incidentally, yes. I just used the word miscreant, and that was for Brian Boland. Brian, if you listen, this week's word is miscreant.
Oh, last time it was cudgel.
Last time it was cudgel. He just came back to me this week with tilth, T-I-L-T-H. Which is...
What is tilth?
Tilth is it's an agricultural term. It's tilling land. So,
like to...
is it tilth?
Tilth?
Earth?
Tilth.
Tilth.
Tilth. Tilth. Earth? Yes. Orion Samuelson uses that word when he does the farm report and everything. Tilth.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So,
when you're out tilthing this weekend, make sure you use proper pesticide to keep the weevils away.
There seems to be an old world theme to these words.
Yeah.
Man out of time.
Did you see the Don Cheadle movie, Talk to Me? Because don't they use miscreant? And I want to say miscreant is in that.
No, I didn't see that.
By the way, there's a good DVD pick for you kids if you haven't seen it. It's been on HBO a lot lately.
Listen, kiddies.
Man, Don Cheadle plays this Washington, D.C. disc jockey. It's a real story. It's about a guy named Petey Green, who was this incredible early 70s, late 60s Washington DJ that really kind of captured the city and was a very, very cool rock or R&B DJ of the time. And it's a very good biopic. And Talk to Me. Great Don Cheadle.
Put it on your Netflix.
There you go.
I'm all about
the recommends. That's why I like Twitter, if you follow me.
Is Netflix still sponsoring us?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Okay. Then I was going to say, if not, then I was ready to go. Yeah, fine. But I was ready to turn on him. Don't worry.
No,
I know where our allegiances are.
So, so did you talk to my guy last night?
I did. Yeah. Although, well, you know, I felt bad because, here's a new thing. I had trouble getting off the phone with Jeff Loeb, and so I ran late. So, the interview with Rucka will not be on by the time this airs, but because we had to reschedule. But before the month is over, Ruck and I will be talking about Batwoman and Detective, and certainly what's going on in Action, and Superman: New World of Krypton. But yeah, it's good stuff. He sent me the first two issues of Detective, and man, I got to tell you, J.H. Williams is knocking it out of the park. The design on the book is beautiful, and it is this really neat synthesis of an artist at his best and a writer's at his best. I mean, really, it's a very strong Greg Rucka crime mystery. And JH is, I just think his designs are very, very exciting. So
is Batwoman hot?
Ironically, yes. No, but you know, honestly, there's that fear because of the way the character was introduced, I think, that everyone was like,
look, hey, it's a lesbian.
It's a lipstick lesbian. Let's not forget the lipstick. Yeah. And if I may. But the good news is, no, I think finally after a bunch of like weird kind of continuity implants, and I don't mean what's on her chest, you know, what they were trying to do to put her in the story in 52 and other places, and even in the Crime Bible story, and even in Final Crisis for that matter. Batwoman seems to have hit the ground running, and there's a reason for her to be in Gotham, and I think it works.
Cool.
So I think it's a cool Greg Rucka crime story. And again, beautiful J.H.
My biggest problem with Batman was that he wasn't a hot lesbian.
Yeah, you know, Robin. All of a sudden,
There is story avenues you could not explore until you made Batman into a lipstick lesbian. So now you can see where it goes.
Well, see,
I'm sure it'll be good.
Well, you had a lot of fan fiction.
It's one of my big hobbies.
A lot of Batman slash, yeah.
Well, just all of it: Star Trek, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Batman, all of it, all mixed together.
One universe.
The Tom verse.
But, you know, stalkers beware. I mean, Rucka did say, oh, tell Chris to, you know, email me. I haven't heard from him in a while.
Well, I don't want to bother him. I don't want to be that guy.
He likes to watch.
I love when he gets that Kathy Bates glint in his eyes when he says that. Oh, I don't want to bother him.
I don't want to bother him.
I don't want to hobble him. I mean, bother him.
Exactly. Oh, man. And that's what I said.
Curse words in your comics.
I'm like, you know, man, you don't know what you're wishing for, but I'll tell him. I'm like, all right. No. Honestly, as I always tell you, mm-hmm. whenever I speak to, and I don't ever hear that reciprocated when you apparently talk to Mr. Rucker, but he immediately says, "How's Chris doing?"
I never talked to him. He just watches him.
Oh, okay. Then how come he got stuck with the stalker moniker, and I'm the one that always like, you know, hey, you know, Greg, what's happening, man?
See, stalking is a silent act.
Misdirection. That's
all right, there you go.
When you're hunting prey,
I haven't
got
the restraining order. I think everything's cool. Yeah,
you sneak up on him.
Okay, all right.
Closer than you think, Greg.
What other names can I drop, Mark, before we wrap up? I can't think of it.
We did Johns, Lowe, Rucka.
Talk to Johns. And actually, I'm rounding up everybody because I am in the process of planning, and hopefully everything will work out and we'll be able to do it. David McKean is coming to Chicago, and this is going to be something very cool. And keep watch if you're a local person or close enough that it's worth the trip. But in mid-July, the weekend before the San Diego convention, McKean is coming with 6 oil paintings that he's done, and he's on a very interesting creative turn right now. The series of paintings is called Nitrate, and they are based on silent films of the very early 1900s, pre-1920, and it's the guy who did From the Earth to the Moon, Georges Méliès. You've seen that where they fire the gun mm-hmm. into the moon's eye and everything. And also F.W. Murnau, who did
Cabinet of
Dr. Caligari, and also didn't he also do the original
M?
Oh, that's it. That wasn't the M. It was no, it was Fritz Lang who did M.
You're right. I'm sorry.
It was okay. Nostradamus. Who's
Nosferatu?
Nosferatu. Thank you.
Nosferatu.
Yeah. So yeah, it's they're really neat paintings, and I'll be doing a word balloon to help promote the show. But it's going to be a live showing at the Portage Theater, which is in Chicago on the northwest side, mm-hmm. On Milwaukee Avenue. Six Corners is right by the Portage Theater. It's just north of Six Corners on Milwaukee Avenue. But they're also going to show Mirror Mask, the film that McKean did. Did he do that with Gaiman?
Yeah, he did with Gaiman. Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I know a lot of the Chicago comic art crowd will be out there to support it as
cool.
well.
Yes, sir.
So,
yes, sir.
You going to be there, Mr. Aikens?
Yes, I will.
Nice. Yes, I've been telling Tony about it for weeks now. It's cool. And I keep reminding Jill Thompson to the point where she's like, I know it's coming. Exactly. And really, Azrael's like, dude, just walk away. Just walk away. Yeah. And I'm like,
Trust me on this.
Okay, sorry, Brian.
Trust me on this.
God damn.
Idiot.
What are you talking about? Silent movies and stuff. Have any of you guys ever gone to the Roger Ebert Film Festival down in Champaign?
Yes, sir.
No.
In Urbana, yes.
No. They there is a...
no.
I want to call them almost like a troupe, but it's the Alloy Orchestra. And every year, they pick a new movie every year, and they rescore an old silent movie.
Oh, that's terrific.
And it's three guys, but the sound that they create, these three guys.
Is one of
them
a one-man band, though?
It's...
That helps if you have a one-man band.
It's kind of like that if you see them, but they do it live. They actually do it.
Symbols on the sheet, on the knee pads and everything.
They're in like the symphony pit doing the music to the movie there live. But if you can check them out online, it's the Alloy, like metal, Alloy Orchestra. Okay. And they did some old Buster Keaton stuff. Yeah. I mean, just some amazing, amazing rescoring of old silent movies. And Metropolis, they did Metropolis one year, I believe. And just
did you ever see the rock and roll Metropolis?
Oh, yeah.
When they colorized it and everything?
That
was a blast.
Really? I saw that three times at the Fine Arts.
There you go. Yeah, I think I saw it at the Fine Arts too.
It was really cool.
Back in the 80s. Yeah, and it was... Was it Giorgio Moreau? I forget how you say his name. Mm. Was kind of the guy in charge of the score. But like, you know, Pat Benatar, all these ridiculous.
It's terrific.
Yeah, it really is cool. And terrific. Then they colorized it, but used the color to accent the film. Mm-hmm.
Well,
so,
originally there was some color in the
film.
Oh,
I didn't realize that.
I
don't know.
I might be wrong, but anyway.
I'm not sure.
It's
very cool. It really was. It was a fun experiment.
Yeah.
And also another thing locally that happens in Chicago every weekend at the Music Box Theater, if you're not aware of it, they show old movies mm-hmm. and they always have a live organist there playing his organ. And it's okay. It's safe for the kids, ironically. but it's really neat, and it gives you that kind of old-time cinema feel. But I'm excited about going to the Portage. I haven't been there since they remodeled it.
Yeah, they did it for the Dillinger movie.
Yes, Public Enemy, the new Johnny Depp film where he's John Dillinger. The inside of the Portage is playing the inside of the Biograph.
Yeah, so they actually
you know, refit.
Restored it.
Man, because
for years, XRT was blocks away from the Portage Theater, and we would just go to the Portage to see a movie. And it had really fallen on hard times. It was really kind of a crap theater.
A shithole.
Yeah, it really, okay, a shithole. It's fine.
I trademarked that.
Since miscreant is a much more impressive word than shithole. Yeah, I know.
I'm sorry. I'm a little bit more lowbrow than Brian Boland's highfalutin words that he throws around.
Tony's cool pals that own castles with moats and everything.
Hey, listen. My jaw drops every time I see I get an email from Brian Boland. It's like I'm getting an email from Brian Boland.
You freaked me out, by the way.
Yeah.
Whenever it was Free Comic Book Day, I'd mm-hmm. seen you and. You said that that Brian Boland had listened to the podcast and had sent you pictures of the farm. I was like, Brian Boland listened to our show. That's so cool. Freaked out now. It was.
He gets high-speed internet in the castle?
Yeah, really. I don't know. Mr. Boland, we're here to wire your castle for you. You can watch Rescue Me, Curb Your Enthusiasm, whatever you want. Am I able to get porn? Yes, you are. No problem.
Slip me 20 quid and we can make that happen. Well, speaking of British and performance art, we have a voicemail. And if you would like to send us a voicemail, you can certainly do so. The phone number is 1-888-977-5903. Here we go.
Hi, guys. It's Matt again. Last one, I promise. But I have
Jesus
noticed
Christ.
That most of the guys that call the show do leave two messages to allow room in between for people going, oh, God, and moaning and stuff. So. Tom, question for you. I want to know who your biggest comedic influences are. I heard, I think Chris mentioned it, that you do improv from time to time.
Yeah.
And... just interested to know who your biggest kind of comedic idols are. I'm a big Bill Hicks, Eddie Izzard fan, as you can tell from my ums and ers and ars. Seriously, just want to know who you dig, who you like, and who you're. I've repeated myself many times. Tom, who are your comedic influences? The end. There you go. Thanks, guys. Bye.
I always think like
is the Magna Carta like 900 pages.
You know, it's like no. I always like envision Templar like loading a gun when he's like leaving. When he's seriously, am I wrong?
I just saw him polishing a gun. What the hell? Just love.
I always say that when Templar calls this podcast,
Matt is also known as Templar.
Yeah, that's
on forums.
So yeah, whenever he calls, around comics or around 11 o'clock comics, I'm like, I'm off on my way to blow up a library, but I felt like you know. They sound like terrorists when
it's
they call.
It's a manifesto.
I'm sorry, they do. Matt, you're a very
nice
guy.
I'm just putting my balaclava on right now as I'm approaching. If the sound is muffled, it's from the ski mask that I'm
well, going to cudgel you.
But talking about performance art, you do improv, which you haven't done any in a while. I haven't gone
no.
to. It's why not?
It's hard.
That is an interesting question. No, it was very easy.
You're very good at it.
I got a wedding to plan. I had a wedding to plan. It's all right. I mean, you have to have you have to enjoy performing for other people that do the same thing. It's because the audience is not the most diverse audience. Like, you will end up performing a lot for just other people that do it, which is for some people is gratifying. For other people, though, the feedback is really weird. It's like if you only drew for other artists,
right.
And like all the feedback is really intense. Like,
yeah, they're not
analyzing,
laughing, but they're thinking, and they're with
everyone
you.
Is fucking thinking about everything constantly,
sure.
Really hard, and it's just like so you do something and then. You have to talk about it because that's what everyone's there for, is to talk about it for like 45 minutes. It's like if it's not funny, it's not funny, you know, and just do something else. But it doesn't really work that way just from the nature of performing. For some people, I just I found myself kind of like getting burnt out on like talking about everything constantly. I just didn't enjoy it that much. Because it was like a hobby. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that are really serious about it, you know.
Well, they're training.
They're training to do it. And I was just, I'm an accountant who also did it on the side, so I was a little less.
Oh, that's how Bob Newhart started, for example.
I was a little less into analyzing
about
everything.
It.
And that's kind of how it goes.
So who are your influences?
I really, my favorite show of all time is Mr. Show.
Good man.
Like my favorite. You just saw, yeah.
Mr. Show. We were warring about that on Twitter. Not really warring, because I love Mr. Show.
Mr. Show is like my favorite show of all time.
He said greater than Kids in the Hall, greater than SNL. And I'm like, well, SNL is like 30 years, so 35 years at this point.
Hey.
But I will contend that, you know.
Tighter. I'm telling you, man, that hour and a half of SNL, if they wanted a show that was really, really funny.
Oh, that's fair. But again, you're also dealing with live versus tape. And certainly if Mr. Show's sketches didn't work, they could always go back and fix it.
Right.
They did do stuff in front of people.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I understand.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're two different.
Man, Bob Odenkirk and Dave Cross, geniuses. Genius comedies.
I would like to add Southern Illinois University at Carbondale graduate, Bob Odenkirk.
He's from Chicago. Calm down.
Naperville.
Southern Illinois University at Carbondale graduate.
I thought you were going to say, I would like
the Kentucky
to add,
border for yourself.
I would like to add to this discussion Ray Stevens, the comedian.
Oh, yes, they call him. I was going to say, Marty Allen is one of your big influences. Charlie Weaver. Lee.
All the greats.
Yeah, exactly.
Odenkirk or Cross, if you had to pick.
Oh, I already know this. Yeah. Stevie, the agent on Larry Sanders, that character alone pushed me over the top. And God, on Ben Stiller.
There's no one funnier at swearing really loud. Like just being like, fuck!
That was his character on Larry Sanders. Exactly.
He does it better than anyone.
Yeah.
Best story.
I think Posehn was involved in Mr. Show, right?
There's a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Patton Oswalt was on there a few times, and Jack Black.
And
was on there.
Laura Nightlinger?
Sarah Silverman, yeah.
Wasn't Laura Nightlinger in part of that? Or was she... Actually, she's more Tenacious D with Jack Black and...
But a ton of people were on that show. It's a great show. And if you get the DVDs, sometimes the commentaries...
Funnier than the episodes.
...are fucking better, because when they do a really bad scene, they'll... Mm-hmm. Talk about something else. And it's funnier, like the werewolf. There's a great werewolf.
I like some of the quick sketch shows that came and went. What about those? Please, Tony.
Werewolf, got excited. Werewolf scenes are the best scenes in the world. There's a... Okay. I got to say, God rest his soul, Harvey Korman and
High anxiety. Classic.
Chicago's
very own Harvey Korman.
Exactly. Exactly.
Did he go to Southern?
No.
He
went to Carol Burnett, sir.
Oh. Yeah. There's a werewolf sketch on Mad TV. It's about and I can't remember her name, but she's really funny. She's playing a college student who's trying to explain why she's not prepared to take this test. So she goes into her professor's office and says, look, I'm really not ready to do this, and I'm not passing this class because, well, I'm a werewolf. And the professor's like, no, this isn't true. And so she starts to change. Of course, she's doing this badly, so she's like growling and climbing on the desk. And it's like, oh, it's okay. I can stop it right now. So that's another.
I'm so itchy.
Michael Chabon wrote a really funny short story that he performed on This American Life about a kid that know, pretended to be a werewolf.
Werewolves in their youth.
Exactly.
I actually sent him that photo in an email some years ago because I had just read Cavalier and Clay, and at the time, you know, his email was online at his website, so I sent him an email thanking him for Cavalier and Clay, because
oh my god, yeah,
and he sent a nice email back, and but yeah, there's a photo of me and my sister, and I'm a werewolf. This is when we're kids. Molly knows it because it's in my studio, and
Halloween or just like
it's Halloween. Okay. It's Halloween
just every day.
Thanksgiving, Halloween. Yeah.
And I'm you know
later. Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
What's the problem?
Yeah, and I'm you know in my werewolf makeup, behind the pumpkin, and she's in the foreground, and it wasn't until years later that I realized, oh wait, she's the gypsy
from the old movie.
Yeah, so
I just saw a documentary about
gypsies.
The refugees that left Germany to come to America to make movies,
and like 20% of them were werewolves.
And I had no idea that but the director of The Wolfman. And I don't remember his name, but really was like slumming at Universal and was handed this B-movie script and elevated the material. And really, I mean, it is such a classic movie.
Yeah, it is.
But it was really kind of an afterthought throwaway film And, you know, between him, Lon Chaney, and the lady that played the gypsy and everything, I mean, that's really one of those late, because it was, you know, really the classic Universal stuff is really the 30s stuff.
And then,
of course, they kind of had the resurgence in the 50s, too, with The Creature. Mm-hmm. But as far as the 40s go, the most interesting film of that period probably was The Wolfman.
Probably was, yeah.
You know, I mean, you had the Son of Frankenstein.
You pronounce it Wolfman? Well, I pronounce it Wolfman.
Sabotage.
Did I tell you when I interviewed Marv Wolfman? And I said, isn't it inevitable that Marv Wolfman would be writing Werewolf by Night? And he's like, no.
No.
Exactly. Yeah, it really was kind of shot me down.
What a dick thing to say. You're a real asshole, John.
Seriously, if there's one Bronze Age guy that, and I respect him, and he's been nice in person and everything and very gracious, but really the one guy was like, yeah, I haven't been asked that question too many times. I'm like, okay.
Wow.
I'm like, all right, I'm sorry, Marv.
Yeah, I get it. My name's Wolfman.
Well, he was actually,
I understand. It's
that
funny.
That was in regards to, so how did Crisis on Infinite Earths happen? He's like, well, you know, it's at the beginning of the Absolute Edition, and it's at the beginning of the hardcover.
So I had to read that book.
Exactly. And I'm like, so I've told the story a million times, but, and I'm like,
this is going well.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
I like our voice that we've invented. It's sort of angry and high-pitched like this.
Exactly.
Wolfman.
So there you go. Man.
Pronounce it Wolfman.
So watch out what you say to certain Wolfman, actually.
Yeah. The Universal monster movies, they're such a big part of my childhood. And I'm in my mid-30s
now. Well, you're 94 years old.
I'm in my mid-30s now.
And back then, films were a nickel.
Yeah, but I mean, PBS, we had Monsterpiece Theater, and
PBS, that's what I like more.
Than Southern Illinois.
In Southern Illinois, that was highbrow shit. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I watch it on PBS. That's where I watched the original Universal monster movies.
PBS.
On Friday nights at 11 o'clock.
We need your funds. We cannot get Creature from the Black Lagoon without it.
We grew up in the city. We watched our monster movies on Sting Julie. Creature features with Jerry G. Bishop. The show proven to give you eye cancer if you watched it for more than 3 weeks in a row.
Four channels, Tony. I had four channels.
Five.
ABC, NBC, CBS, and PBS. That was it.
I watched mine on DVD.
Who was the host of Monsterpiece Theater?
I don't remember.
All right, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
We didn't have like a Svengoolie or anything like that.
And don't forget, we have tote bags for watching Monsterpiece Theater.
Up next is Wolfman. The Wolfman, sorry.
But it was a big treat whenever you got the Abbott and Costello ones.
Oh, meets Frankenstein. Yes. That's a great one.
We have Abbott and Costello garden boxes are yours for $19.95.
I really like this one.
Yeah, good times.
Universal Monster Movies and Doctor Who. PBS did good by me.
Up next is Frankenstein.
I see that, there's a man named Karloff. I believe that's a Russian name. Playing the monster.
If you're interested this weekend, there's Russian folk dancing at the community center. And you can follow it up by coming home and watching Frankenstein.
Right here.
Frankenstein.
Monsterpiece.
Monsterpiece
Theater.
All right, I'm gonna stop talking about shit.
Let's just end this. Let's just end this now.
I want to wait. I got an Abbott and Costello jag. Because the
Hello
Meets Frankenstein, classic.
Yes.
Jekyll and Hyde with Boris Karloff, by the way. Not bad.
Not bad, yeah.
The Mummy, piece of shit movie. Such a bad film, Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy, that they have character names at the beginning of the film. At some point, they're abandoned, and Abbott is yelling for, Costello, get out of here! The Mummy's coming after us! And I am telling you, and even the great Chuck Shaden, one of the great Chicago broadcast legends that is winding down his career, big old-time radio fan, and everything that's nostalgic he loves. And he's like, those Abbott and Costello movies, they don't hold up. He's just like, outside of Frankenstein and Buck Privates, they don't hold up. They really don't. Yeah. They really don't. I mean, who's on first? That's a great 5 minutes.
Yeah.
There's another 74 minutes to the movie then that still doesn't hold up that much. So,
have you never heard the two-hour version of Who's on First?
I'm not asking you. I'm telling you. I believe that's the one that ends with Lou pulling out the gun and shooting Bud down.
Well,
is your third base.
It takes a really long time to get to the point that I'm trying to think of what center field's name would be. They do all nine positions. It's long.
Do they have a pinch hitter? Yes, they do.
Put down a sacrifice bunt.
Do they like the loogie?
Yeah, who's the left-handed reliever out of the, you know, it's yeah. really, it's long and tedious. It's tedious, yeah.
I just asked you.
it's
I'm right. telling you, that's his name.
It's what's, fucking tedious.
Let's wrap this puppy up.
We yeah, do, let's
we,
get out of here.
We do have
end
some,
it now.
We do have some emails. Oh, we're going to push those no. to next time.
We
don't worry,
Tom. Push off.
Thank you to everyone that has emailed
the
show. We get,
like, probably one email every 2 weeks,
and
but
it's
we just push
one.
It. Yeah,
yeah, I had no. another thought I wanted
I
to
I just wanted to make sure.
I'm loading the gun again.
You can email the show at info@aroundcomics.com. I told you the hotline number is 1-888-977-5903.
By this time, I've taken the school.
Run by the iTunes Music Store and leave us an iTunes review. Do the same thing for Word Balloon.
Or Monsterpiece Theater.
Or a Monster.
It's a fine show. Next week, it's
Tom versus the Flash. Mm-hmm. 11 o'clock comics and the new podcast, The League of Nobodies. That's all in the Around Comics family there.
Dracula.
Drop by the Around Comics community section where you can continue with us on the 100 days of 100 bullets. By the time this comes out, we should be about, 25, 28 issues in. So,
is that about the Connor Fifth Detective, I'm assuming?
Yeah, we'll probably be. Yep. Ooh, great arc. Real quick, Tony Akins, if people want to find you on the interwebs, or do you hide from that? You have a blog, right?
Don't look at me. I will eat your brain.
Yeah, I have a blog. It's Hilarity Ensues. Just Google my name. It'll take you to my blog. I put up a lot of my work process up there. I gotta update it, so I'm a bit behind. I'm still posting the war arc.
Tom is disappointed in you.
Yeah, well, I'm disappointed.
No,
in
I'm just
too.
Shocked that you're allowing people to see how the magic happens.
Well, I don't throw go everything up. I don't throw
okay,
everything.
Fine.
Up,
yeah.
So
it goes from like a pen, like
blank
a stick
page.
Figure drawing to a finished page. A lot of stuff happens in between. Yeah. Whatever.
You wouldn't understand.
You wouldn't understand.
Yeah. So I've got that, you know, and it's I've really been neglecting it because I'm spending far too much time on Facebook. So
Facebook over Twitter. Interesting.
I've never Twittered, so okay.
Get on the Twitter.
But do you find, and don't get me wrong, folks, I love Facebook too, but sometimes Facebook is the high school reunion that never ends.
Yeah, it really
Tony,
is.
How have you been?
Yes, I've been hunting you down for years.
It's a bad sign that first time you get someone that tries to friend you that you're like,
I don't mind being friends, and I don't mind like catching up with old friends, but then like, Do you play Mob Wars? Have people turned you into zombies? Do you play all those?
No, games? I don't get into that because that
Good
looks crazy.
No shit.
That looks crazy. I don't even understand how that works.
I know. Tony, yeah. Zelda Mekowitz just bit you.
Mm-hmm.
Joined the. I know. It's like, and then you're like, who the fuck is this? Oh, yeah, that's so-and-so that used to be Zelda Jenkins, but she got married. Now I don't remember her name.
Get it.
I don't want to play your Mob War. Go away.
Yeah.
Just say hello.
And then people get angry with you.
Too late.
We talked about the Windy City Comic Con.
I heard about that. What's all that about?
Tony will be there.
I will be there.
I was actually talking to our buddy John Suntris, who is going to be running a bunch of our panels
Word
this
Balloon
year.
Live.
Yeah, Word
Why
Balloon
not?
Live.
Yeah, expect some participation in that, Mr. Akins.
Okay.
Not
you got
drawing at your table.
You're all right, awesome.
That'd be wonderful.
Check it out at WindyCityComicCon.com. Plenty of good Word Balloon stuff coming up. You can check that out at Newsarama or WordBalloon.com.
oh, my
else?
God, yes. Are we done plugging everything?
Are we done? We done? Tom, you got anything else?
I do want to plug Wild Claw Theater.
Yes.
Yes. Death Scribe is coming up. So go to
Google.
Oh my God! Google Wild Claw Theater. They put on horror productions, and
they're like radio.
Yeah,
is that the radio show?
It's a radio show. Yeah, it's a radio show. They do it every October at the Music Box.
Wow.
It's like a live radio show. They're taking submissions for scripts, or they should be taking submissions for scripts. It's a contest. They pick 10 scripts. And then they have the actors go up on stage. There's a Foley artist, and they perform these radio plays. There's a Foley artist. It's awesome. It's awesome.
Tom's interested all of a sudden.
Yeah,
it's just a guy named Foley. I don't want to like give Bill.
All he
that
gets
thing,
up there is with a giant piece of meat and aluminum sheet.
Right.
All I can do is punching and thunder.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So
there's a horse running.
Tremendous.
And that's what I was doing.
It's tremendous.
So, if you ever have a chance to see Prairie Home Companion live, that's the full moment.
Oh,
the Foley artist there is fantastic.
Where the men grow strong and taking Valium because it's so fucking boring.
Oh, my God. Jesus. That is good.
We've got Monsterpiece Theater coming up later on.
How do you tie a noose?
Stop. Guy Noir has killed himself, apparently.
Lake Wobegon.
I would like to thank everyone for joining us. That would be Mike Norton. I think Tim Seeley was bumping around here. Tony Akins, John Suntress, Tom Caters, and our special guest, Mr. Matt Sturgis. And then there is always Mr. Mark Beatty for hosting us. Thank you very much.
And Molly and Jose watching.
And Molly and Jose. Yeah, the peanut gallery is thinned out, but they hanging strong. So thank you, folks. Everyone have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again next Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime,
in between time,
we'll be everywhere in
and around
comics.
It's a creature from Godzilla.
Never mentioned PBS ever.
I stood and I watched you leave until I'm gone. I should cry some more. I stayed with a cigarette. I thought we'd been here sometime.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009.